alleged a number of errors we think the court made in its determination. I can synthesize them down to about three major errors that we believe the court made. The first has to do with the parenting time that the court determined would be appropriate for my client, Mr. Consbrook. Second has to do with the court's calculation of incomes in making his determination of child support and alimony obligations for my client. And the third had to do with the equalization of assets that the court required my client to pay $112,000 approximately to equalize the division of assets of the parties. But it was clear that there was only one place that it could come from, and that was his retirement account, and the court didn't do that. So what I'd like to do is talk first about the issue of parenting time. This is a 20-year marriage. At the time of the divorce, the parties had two children, both girls who were 8 years old and 5 years old. The temporary order in this case had given the parties joint legal custody and given my client, Mr. Consbrook, every other week visitation from Wednesday after school when he picked them up and he delivered them back to school on Monday morning. On the off week, he would be given Wednesday evening visitation just for a few hours.
And it's my understanding that's the schedule then that was ultimately determined to be the permanent order.
Actually, it wasn't. What happened is, and
after the motion to alter or amend.
Even after the motion to alter or amend. If you review the decree and the order from the court, when the decree was entered, he cut him down to ending his visitation on Sunday night with the Wednesday on the off week. We filed a motion for new trial, and in the order of the court that was entered May 13, 2015, the court indicated that paragraph 6 of his original decree would be amended, and it says, such that the defendant, my client, is granted reasonable rights of visitation and parenting time, which shall include every other weekend commencing on Wednesday after school until the defendant delivers the children to school the following Monday or at 8 o'clock a.m. the following Monday if the children do not have school on that Monday. All other aspects of our motion was overruled. If you go back to paragraph 6 of the decree where the judge originally gave my client visitation from Wednesday to Sunday, that included, and it says, shall include every other weekend commencing on Wednesday after school until the following Sunday at 7 p.m. and shall include one evening during defendant's off week as the parties agree from when the children get out of school till 7:30. So he didn't even reinstate that as...
You think that was eliminated at all?
I think it was eliminated because he said that paragraph, that portion of the paragraph 6 was amended to have his visitation read just as I've read. He didn't say, and then he will have the Wednesday evening.
But weren't those two separate sentences?
It was all in one sentence, Judge. It continues on in one sentence, and it doesn't mention his Wednesday anyplace else in the original decree. What we get to, I think, even beyond that, is that my client does not believe that the visitation is appropriate. I understand that it's discretionary with the judge in making his determination as to what the visitation should be. My client wanted a 50-50 timesharing on a week-on, week-off basis and have Wednesday and evening each week for the parents have children. The court found, and again, quoting from the court's findings, he found that my client had been an attentive and supporting father and had a good relationship with the girls.
But then the court also makes some pretty specific findings about the nature of the parties' relationships and their communications, referencing the numerous emails and texts that were perhaps less than friendly.
He did, and the problem is that there are only two of those communications that were offered into evidence at the time of trial, and these parties had been separated for over a year before it came to trial. My client always, she testified, happily testified that my client always got the children to all their events and didn't miss any except in one swim meet is what they testified. There was a testimony about from my client and from the appellee. But I believe in the judge's ruling, what he said again from the decree, he does not believe when we ask for additional time, He does not believe that increasing the parenting time would necessarily be in the children's interest, as this would likely result in even more opportunities for the parties to butt heads. There's no basis for that finding to jump from increase in time equals more butting of heads. The parties were picking up and delivering at school. They could do that same thing on a week-to-week visitation. The only time they would ever have to see each other, possibly, would be in a pickup and drop-off one time on Wednesday, because one person would pick up the children from school. Then there'd have to be that one time where they meet.
Mr. Roberts, I understand that the parenting time is the highest priority for your client.
Yes.
I would like, before we run out of time, to ask you a couple matters related to the financial portion of this. And one question is with regard to the property equalization, and you've indicated that it should have been divided by quadro.
Correct.
Because the largest amount of the asset comes from that retirement account. What kind of retirement account was that?
It was I believe it was a 401k, Your Honor.
All right.
There wasn't evidence submitted about the retirement account at all, though, was there?
There was. The retirement account had $219,000.
Well, in terms of there was a property statement, but there was no evidence about the specifics of either party's retirement accounts or any tax consequences of cashing them in or anything like that.
Well, there weren't any. There wasn't any testimony about cashing them in and the tax consequences. And I will tell the court that when you do these cases, as we do each day, when there is no other place for an asset to come from, then they use those retirement accounts to equalize it. Everybody knows that there's no tax consequence in a divorce case. That's why we use quadros to divide the asset.
Did you make a request for a quadro to be entered if there was an equalization, which I would guess you anticipated there would be?
Yes.
You did request that.
I believe it's in our suggestions, correct. But the fact of the matter is that there's no tax consequence, and neither Ms. Consbrook was not in dire need of any money. And the only place my client could get it, unless he sells his car, as counsel suggested, fishing boats, and something else, and we don't even know what that would come up to. He would have to come up with $112,000 to be able to pay her. There's no place for it to come from. You don't anticipate, at least I haven't in 40-plus years, anticipated that in advance that the court is going to say, come up with this money, as opposed to using a qualified domestic relations order to equalize the assets.
Are you aware of any cases in which this court or the Supreme Court has said it was an abuse of discretion to not order a quadro in a similar circumstance?
I did not find any cases that said that, Your Honor.
I'd like to
ask the court's not required to do that, right?
No, the court's not required to do it.
I'd like to ask you about the 4% retirement deduction that you complain about.
Yes.
Was there evidence presented to the court that the parties were actually withholding for investments in retirement accounts?
We offered pay stubs. Those pay stubs have the retirement showing on it.
Did both parties have that reflected in there?
I believe they did, yes. I don't have that. I don't have the bill of exceptions with the exhibits, but I believe that was the reason that it should be in there, as I indicated, is because the pay stubs reflect that the parties were taking out for retirement. Let me skip forward to the money. The other issues, Judge, Your Honors, were the court's calculation of income for my client. He suggested $7,000 gross income for him. That was even higher than what his average was from the tax returns that were offered into evidence at the time, including his bonus that he had. All of that added together was $6,074 a month in gross income. He suggested using 7. The court used 7,950, I think. So we don't believe that the court utilized the evidence that was in front of it to calculate that child support and the alimony. And the alimony, I'll just briefly say, I have a few more seconds. The alimony, it's not a long term. I understand it's not a lot of money in the scheme of things. But I don't believe that the appellee was able to show to the court that she was in need of it, or that she qualified under 42-365 for an alimony award of any nature. She supported herself. She was working. She was only working 35 hours a week. She was volunteering other times. She could have had a different income, more income, and hadn't done it. I don't believe that there was an alimony award that should have been granted.
Didn't payment of alimony using the court's child support calculations actually leave your client with less money than
did.
Kayla would have.
Substantially less, yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Plachek?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Mr. Roberts and my client, Ms. Consbrook. My name is Shane Plachek. I'm the attorney for the appellee, Kayla Consbrook, the mother, and the plaintiff in this case. And I'll try and address Mr. Roberts' arguments sequentially as he addressed them. I'd start with parenting time. And for me, at least, parenting time can be addressed through an objective measure. If we look at the temporary order, Todd received Wednesday until Sunday overnights, five overnights, every other weekend. That's 130 overnights. There was no discussion in the temporary order of holidays. There was no discussion of summertime. My argument at the motion for new trial is that Todd didn't receive any less in that decree, which dropped one of the overnights, takes it from 130 to 104. He received 6 weeks of summer parenting time. That more than makes up for that, I think, that reduction. Judge Kubi altered the decree and added an additional overnight. Therefore, I think the argument before the court that Todd proposes is, I'm still unhappy, but I'm receiving more time than I received under the temporary order that I agreed to in January of 2014.
Mr. Plotzik, I want to clarify something. What is your position of the court's order after the motion for new trial when it extended the weekend visitation overnight to Monday? Do you believe it eliminated the alternating Wednesday evening?
Judge, I don't believe it eliminated it. And I don't think my client believes it eliminated it. I understand the interpretation of Mr. Roberts. That can be clarified, but I don't think it was eliminated.
Okay.
And I think the parties have been
observing that. I appreciate
that.
Thank you.
Sure. When we talk about the request to Todd, I think he's asking for a joint physical custody arrangement. I think the record is full of evidence that shows that these parties, and we can place blame either way, but these parties can't communicate. And that lack of communication leads to anxiety. It leads to problems for these two young girls. My client, at least when we talk about text messages, evidence in the record, my client submitted some evidence that these are the efforts I've made in order to involve Mr. Consbrook in joint parenting. In response, I don't think he responded at all in a, a constructive manner, as this court is aware by the Bill of Exceptions and by Judge Kubi's finding. There was not evidence that these two people can co-parent for these children. When we talk about a temporary order, this temporary order was in place for about 10 months. And I look at the temporary order as an experiment, a proving ground, and I think my client was reasonable in trying to co-parent with Mr. Consbrook. But when reconciliation was basically off the table, these parties' communication deteriorated. So I don't think forcing the parties to co-parent is the answer for these two young girls, and I think that's what Judge Kubi was looking at. If there aren't any other questions about the parenting time, I'll move on to the income of the parties.
Would you mind actually going to the property settlement equalization?
Okay.
And whether or not a quadro should have been entered, because I'm looking at the table of the assets of the parties, and I'm wondering where he is supposed to come up with $112,000 forthwith.
Sure. And this would be my argument. Mr. Consbrook received the vast majority of assets. He received the marital home. Yes, there was a mortgage. He received his Cadillac Escalade. He received the three boats. He received his fishing equipment that my client valued at $70,000, given Judge Kubi, I think, determined it might be around $12,000. He received his guns. He received, if I didn't mention it, the four-wheeler utility trailer.
Let me just cut to this net estate figure. If you remove his retirement account, his net estate is $84,202. Her net estate is $79,444. There's a very small difference if you remove the retirement account. So clearly the retirement account is what prompts the need for this large equalization. Isn't it the normal practice to do that through a quadro?
I would say that in order to, so first of all, if I could respond to Mr. Roberts' argument that taxes, a quadro doesn't have tax consequences. A quadro does not have a penalty, and given this is information not submitted on the record because there was no expert testimony, a quadro does not have a penalty for the recipient. My client would certainly have to elect this $112,000 or whatever as income. That is the penalty. So it's not a $112,000 payment. It's $112,000 less her income, right? So when we argue or when Mr. Roberts asserts there are no tax consequences, there certainly are. There's no penalty, right? So when we look at the assets available, I think the party who's asking for favorable valuation, which is Mr. Consbrook, is the party that has the obligation and the burden to present an expert to say, Judge, I think determining marginal tax rate of the parties and the value of this retirement account is beyond layperson testimony, is beyond what we expect the court to do. Therefore, that $200,000 401k is actually worth $160,000 or something along those lines. I think this
could be equitably divided simply by entry of a quattro. But it's the same consequences you talk about that would affect your client would affect Mr. Consul.
He is receiving some non-taxable assets, though, that my client is not receiving. So when he gets the equity in the house, that's non-taxable. If she receives half of a taxable asset, to me, that is not exchanging apples for apples. I think an expert could have reduced that 401k down to an after-tax amount that we could have used to do apples to apples, but there was no expert proposed. So I think the language that Judge Kuby used, it's payable forthwith, is clear, it's unambiguous. I think this court in McGuire previously in 2002 determined you need an expert if you want to change the valuation of these pre-tax assets. That was not submitted. So I think that Mr. Consbrook needs to pay this amount forthwith. It needs to be a liquidated amount. Parties aren't allowed to deposit, non-liquidated amounts to satisfy judgments.
That wasn't a request made by your client at trial, though, was it, that the equalization payment be made forthwith? I don't see any suggestions to the court from your client at trial.
I didn't request to be payable immediately forthwith, mm-hmm. but it's anticipated in a reasonable amount of time after dissolution of the marriage.
Was there any objection at trial? Mr. Roberts said the request was made to enter a quadro. Was there any objection to the use of a quadro to equalize the estate?
So my recollection during the trial, these were written suggestions in order to advise the court that I don't think the judge accepts objections to information meant to advise the court, not offered for substance. So no. In fact, I don't even know if that was mentioned. It might have just been offered in order to advise the court. There was no oral, my recollection is there's no oral testimony about a qualified domestic relations order until the motion to alter, amend, or to have a new trial.
And at the motion to alter or amend, you did request that the court not alter the equalization payment by a quadro.
Right, for the very reason that I think whatever Judge Kuby determined was the equalized amount, my client would have to pay income tax on that, so it's less than that amount. So when Mr. Consbrook receives the equity in the house, that is not the same as the exact number that my client would get in the quadro. She has to pay income tax on that. If I move on to the income of the parties, so when we went to trial, I think Judge Kuby focused on Todd Consbrook being somewhat evasive about his income. Generally speaking, the parties are the best, I think, provide the best historical narrative about their income. In this case, I think Todd Consbrook failed to do that. When I asked him why his testimony at trial was a lower base salary than what he put in his temporary affidavit for 2013, his comment was he didn't recollect doing that in his affidavit. I think what Judge Kuby did is he took Todd's base salary, which was basically what Todd testified to, and he took the bonus that Todd said I get regularly, and I can't remember when I haven't gotten a bonus. And he amortized that over 12 months. He added that to Todd's base salary. Judge Kuby arrived at a number of $7,700 a month, far closer to Todd's request of $7,000 a month than my request of $9,500 a month. So I don't think we can say that Judge Kuby was abused his discretion in choosing a number that was between the range offered, that was substantiated by the evidence, and that, for all practical purposes, more closely aligned to Todd's number than my number.
What about the retirement deduction?
Prior to this argument today, I looked at my client's pay stub. Her retirement deduction is reflected on that as far as what she pays. That is not on the child support worksheet. I'd acknowledge that. I couldn't find Mr. Consbrook. I presume it's reflected on his pay stub as well. I'd submit that to the court. That is something that could be corrected rather easily.
But with regard to alimony, I mean, we understand that the law says that alimony isn't used to equalize the incomes of the parties. In this case, it would seem to me that based on the child support worksheet, payment of alimony actually leaves Mr. Consbrook with less net income than your client. Is that appropriate?
Well, when we talk about net income, Judge, I'm just thinking of gross numbers because I heard that comment. So when Judge Kuby says I'm imputing $7,700 to Todd, I think his child support is $1,100, so now he's down to $6,600. He pays $500 in alimony for 24 months. That's $6,100. My client was calculated around, I think she was somewhere around $4,000. You add $1,100 to that plus $500. So I don't think that she ends up far in excess of what Todd Consbrook is. She received 13% of the alimony request she made at trial. She received 0% of the attorney's fees she asked for at trial. So I don't think it's an abuse of discretion what Judge Kubi granted her. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was the appellant out of time?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you both, counsel. You're excused.
Thank you.
The next matter this morning is Marshall versus Marshall.